Welcome to a very special holiday edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. Joined by Jeff Eagles, I am John Schmelk. The phone number, 201-939-4513. Give us a call as we look back at the very disappointing Giants loss 24-19 to the Philadelphia Eagles. Jeff, good morning. How much sleep did you get?
About as much as you did.
So not a whole lot. I got up between 5 and 6, not a ton. And unfortunately, always tougher to go to bed after a loss like that.
The Grinch was there yesterday.
And Jeff, we talk about the keys to winning these games, and the Giants really, you know, broke a lot of those so-called rules last night in this game, and it's not really, frankly, a mystery as to why they lost. And we'll start with the elephant in the room, and to me, that's the turnover margin. You're not going to win many games in this league when you're minus 2 in the turnover ratio. It gave the Eagles 7 points early in the game to give them a 14-point lead. It also helped set up a field goal later on, giving the ball on their own 44. They had to travel only 30 yards to kick a field goal. So those things are difficult to overcome, especially when you have an offense that has struggled this year
to
the
score
way the Giants have struggled.
And really, when you come out in the game, look at, I mean, yeah, the first drive by the Eagles, the Giants are a little bit kind of sluggish. They go down and hey, Lane Johnson, he was a big comeback for the Eagles, you think? They started running behind him and Sproles goes in and then the pick six. So now you're down 14-0 with less than, 2.5 minutes into the game, and that's a tough pill to swallow. But you can never turn the ball over on the road and expect to win. This team did a good job of it last week with no turnovers. We mentioned it in our pregame show about one of our factor fictions was the turnover ratio. You know, it's this team has not historically done well in that department, and it hurt them. And then again, when you're down in that red zone, John, and you are only kicking field goals, that's a tough, you're not going to win the game. And that's what happened yesterday. 1 of 5 down there in the red zone. And also the Giants, who have done really well defensively in the red zone, gave up some points yesterday too.
And both Eagles scores came from outside the red zone. So the Giants defense, unfortunately, still giving up some of those chunk plays, which has kind of plagued them this year. But you're right. Red zone efficiency, takeaways. And when I look at the overall picture of this game, Jeff, we had games earlier this year where the Giants were getting outgained by 100, 125 yards.
Still win.
They would still win.
Yeah.
This was the opposite. They actually outgained Philadelphia in this game by nearly 200 yards. The Giants gained 470 yards of offense to just 286 for Philadelphia.
And that's like twice as what they've normally do.
That is a significant
time of possession
difference. The Giants also won the time of possession battle against the team that is first in the league in time of possession. The Giants held the ball for more than 34 minutes in this game. So it shows you how a lot of these numbers that you look at can be good. They were better on third down. Giants 45%. Eagles just 33%. Giants had more yards per play than the Eagles, more yards per carry than the Eagles. Everything went the Giants' way. But it shows you how important red zone and takeaways are, because all of those advantages were completely eliminated because of those mistakes.
Another category that, you know, we're not going to get into it a lot about this, but, you know, penalties at crucial moments. Third down plays. The Eli Apple play was on third down. The roughing the passer was on, I believe, on third down against Vernon.
Right.
Now, we can talk about those all you want, okay? But the fact is there was a flag thrown. It was accepted and big time. And in the parts of the game, that can be very crucial. And those were. They were very crucial penalties and extended drives.
Right.
Another thing, too, defensively, John, when you look at this team historically through the season, they've been very good tacklers. Last night, the tackling was atrocious.
And you know, that Eli Apple penalty and that Eagles touchdown never would have happened if they would have tackled Nelson Aguilar on the,
or
was it
Dorian Beckham.
Beckham, on that little slip screen. But Keenan Robinson and I think Eli Apple ran right past
him.
It should have been a 2 or 3 yard loss. Instead, he runs 6 yards for the first down.
Exactly. And then when you get the penalty, and, you know, Eli Apple is a young player, he's got to learn to let things go. You know, you got to get the next play.
Yeah.
And that's just a little bit of experience that will come with that guy.
He had the missed tackle, then he had the penalty, and then
he
got beat
the
for
top.
The touchdown.
Yeah.
All
a,
in the
a
same
bad
drive.
Sequence.
A very bad sequence.
And then not to mention the penalties. The biggest penalty in the game, in my mind, was the penalty by John Jerry on 4th and 1. Trying to, you know, that was a big, big mistake.
Yeah, that's the thing. People, you know, Giant fans want to talk about the bad calls, and that's fine. You can, and I thought it should have been pass interference on Shepard
in
the game too.
Yeah.
But here's the bottom line. If you make the tackle on the slip screen, the Eli Apple penalty never happens.
If they punt the ball.
Right. And was that also the same drive as the Vernon roughing the passer penalty?
No, it was not.
That was a different drive.
Yeah, different drive.
Okay. But then you have the non-pass interference call. That never comes into play if John Jerry doesn't commit the false start penalty and you're running the ball on fourth and inches instead of throwing the ball on fourth and six.
And you know how aggressive the Giants have been all season on fourth down. You got to think that they're going to make that first down. Well, we don't know, but, I mean, listen, fourth and one is a lot easier than fourth and six.
Absolutely. So, yes, you can point at some of those things. If you want to complain about it, that's fine. We have the phones open. You can do that if you want. But the team still had plenty of opportunities to overcome those penalties or lack of penalties being called and win the game anyway.
Also, the Giants gave up a little bit more rushing than they wanted to. I mean, they've been very good against the rush. The Eagles did run the ball pretty good. And then, you know, if we kind of want to segue into the positives of the game, mm-hmm. I think the Giants are now continuing to get better in the run game. For a third week in a row, that number has gone up. We also saw the more presence of Paul Perkins, who we all can get excited a little bit about. I think that the Giants coaches and the players are becoming a little bit more confident with Paul Perkins and what he can do. He's a good player. He can run fast. He gets to the hole quickly. And they trust him in blocking, which is a good thing.
Do you think they could have ran a little bit more yesterday?
I believe that they abandoned the run way too early, in my opinion. And I will tell you guys, from being around this football as long as I have, any time that you're going to go and try to run 63 passes in a game, and it's by circumstance. I understand that, but you know that's a lot to ask for a quarterback to throw in 63 times in a game. I think that the running game could have been a little bit more successful early on. I mean, the first drive of the game was the one that I scratched my head against. It was just like they ran the ball on the first play of the game for 7 yards, and then they came back and passed it for two incomplete passes in a row.
Down the field.
Yeah. Then they punt, and what do the Eagles do? They come down on the first drive of the game and score. You're down 7-0. So this team cannot get down in scoring because they don't have the power to come back and put points on the board. So down 14-0, you put yourself in a huge hole at the beginning of the game, and they just played catch-up the whole way.
All right, everybody, thank you for joining us on Twitter. We appreciate it. If you want to watch or listen to the rest of the show, head over to your Giants mobile app or go to Giants.com, and you can check out the rest of the show there. And, Jeff, the other thing that happens when you throw the ball 63 times, your quarterback gets shellacked a little bit. And Eli took a lot of hits in this game. Again, I thought a lot of low hits. I don't think they were illegal hits, but they were, you know, around that hip area, you know, the upper thigh. And, boy.
They were diving at him.
You know, Bo Allen was in there a lot.
He had a presence last
night. He was in there a lot.
And it's a guy that we really never talked about all week.
I mean, and if, frankly, if Eli's not hit by whomever beat Eric Flowers around the edge on that throw to Will Tye at the end of the game, maybe he has a little bit more zip on it, and maybe he gets there a little bit sooner. So, and Will Tye, by the way, after the game, did say he should have attacked the ball.
Yeah.
And he admitted it. He knew it. I asked him the direct question on the postgame show. You heard it.
Yeah.
And he basically said, yeah, I absolutely should have went for the ball.
Yeah, and I saw the replay on it, and I think that from his reaction, he was so focused in on the ball and thinking he was going to catch it. I don't think he saw the safety coming from the right side.
He did not see him at all.
He
said he thought he was wide open, and he didn't think he had to go for the ball.
Okay,
he thought nobody was near.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, that's not an excuse, but that was the reason he gave.
Another big play in this game, John, and you go through the sequence of how it happened, was the play with Odell Beckham reaching for the first down, okay, and the referee's calling it a first down. And for a lot of the viewers that may or may not have seen it, but
I thought it was short.
It was short, but here's the thing. If it was inside the 2 minutes, the referees called a first down, would they have challenged it upstairs? Because, you know, the coach can't throw a flag if it's inside the 2 minute warning.
Right, and that was the final play before the 2 minute warning.
Right, it went into, you know what I'm saying? It went with 1:56 on the clock when they stopped it.
I think it was close enough they would have reviewed it anyway.
They would have reviewed it anyway.
That's my guess.
But can they review that play?
Sure you can. The officials can review any play they want inside of 2 minutes.
Okay.
It doesn't have to be a scoring play or a turnover. It could be any play they can review.
The other play that we just had talked about with the Will Tye plays with 14 seconds left on the clock. You know, I don't know if the Giants, if he makes that catch, they get down there and spike the ball and have one more play left or not. Listen, I know the rule of thumb is 15 seconds. That's kind of how we. I remember in our hurry up field goals.
Yeah, I don't. Think
you had inside of 15 seconds, you're not going to be able to get to the line and clock it.
Now there's a chance though, if he goes up and attacks the ball, maybe the Eagle defender runs into him and there's a DPI call, and all of a sudden
that's
the clock
probably
stops.
Your best scenario.
Correct.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And then the other thing I want to talk about too, and you know the media talked about it. Odell was very upset after the game that he didn't make a play on that post play. I think that was the play right before the interception.
Yeah,
it was
an overthrow.
Right?
Yeah.
I appreciate his competitiveness, and I actually like the fact that he's very upset about that, and he wanted to make the play, and he took the hit after the game. He said, look, I ran out of gas. I should have gotten to the ball. And again, I think that's a good thing. I want a guy angry that he doesn't make a play he thought he should have made to help the team win the game. That, to me, is a good thing. I got no problem with that. I didn't think he was really open. You had two guys underneath.
Well, he wasn't wide open, yeah.
But there was a safety just waiting over the top in the end zone. To me, if he's going to catch that ball, that safety's right there to knock it away or throw an interception. So
it would have been a bang bang play,
and it would have been an unbelievable catch if he could have gotten
because he
up
was
there
towards the back of
that
the end
safety.
Zone.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So I don't think that play was as close to being made as Odell thought it was doing it live.
But again,
I like the fact that he cares and he's into it. But I think he's being too hard on himself. I think asking himself to make that play is asking a lot.
I also believe that when he goes back and looks at it on a film, he's going to be saying, hey, you know, I probably gave a little bit more credit to Eli than I should have. That ball was going to be very difficult to catch.
Well, and I think the question is, too, and I tried to get the coach's tape this morning. I didn't have a chance to look at it yet, unfortunately. I thought from the angle that I saw – and Bob Papa thought it was really close. So me and him actually disagree on this, and I haven't had a chance to look at it enough times.
I saw it on the replay.
Decision. I thought, you know, that Beckham was running more of a post, and I thought Eli threw it over his outside shoulder a little bit.
He did.
It wasn't really in stride. Odell would have had to change direction.
It was right over his head. It was right over his head.
Right, but he was going this way, and the ball went straight. So it wasn't like it led him perfectly. You know what I mean?
And it was high. It was high.
It would have been a really, really hard catch.
It would have been one of those amazing catches that he can make. But listen, you can't blame the guy for
being – I think he's being too hard on himself.
He very is. And that's just the way he is. And, you know, and a lot of people are going to, you know, hit. The guy's a competitor. We know about it. He's got a drive and a will to win every single play, every game he does. And you know what? It's just – That's a lot in that 2 minute. You heard the interview with him. I mean, running 30 yards again, then coming back, and they're in a hurry up. That's a lot of gassers you got to run after practice to keep in that shape.
They had that one period, Jeff, and I'm not sure if they showed this on TV. You were watching back in the studio, but I saw it in the stadium. There were a couple plays, I think it was in the third quarter, but I don't quite remember, where Odell was very slow getting back to the line of scrimmage after a couple routes, and then he wasn't even really getting into the huddle. He had to get the call by proxy. And he said after the game he was cramping. And I was wondering, why the heck isn't he getting in the huddle? What's going on? Because he always hustles back and everything like that. And I bet you those are the plays that he was cramping, so he couldn't get back to the line of scrimmage quickly. Which means he was playing through a lot, which you got to give him.
There was one when the whole offense was lined up, and here they were waiting on Odell to get across the line of scrimmage and turn around. And
I bet you he was cramping.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, he was in for 99% of the plays.
And he is every week, too. Dude doesn't take any plays off.
No. They're thoroughbreds, man.
And he had a nice game, by the way. He didn't get in the end zone, which I'm sure is, you know, bugging the heck out of him. But how can you get too mad at a guy that catches, what was it, 11 balls for 156 yards?
And was targeted 20 times.
11 for 150.
Look at the target.
20 targets. But you know what? The ball got spread around. I mean, I guess when you throw it 63 times, the ball has to get spread around,
You think
right?
so. Yeah.
Cruz got 13 targets.
And had a nice
11.
Game. Had a nice
Victor,
game.
Yeah, he did. But there was one play where he should have came up with the one catch on the third down. Well, it was weird. He tried to catch it kind of like this, Jeff, instead of trying to catch it like that. Which
all
was
of them.
Odd.
Seven drop passes in yesterday's game.
Were there seven technical drops?
Yep.
Wow. I didn't think there were that many. That's interesting. Yep. But let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 different Giants receivers caught passes, and 10 different – or 9 different receivers were targeted. Roger Lewis had that one deep pass that the – I think it was McKelvin made a nice play.
And they brought him in on that play to get a little bit of separation and get some speed down the field to try to make a play. But there's a lot of people that are going to probably think, well, why are you throwing the ball to Will Tye on the last play of the game? I can almost promise you that that's not the number one read to throw to Will Tye there.
But in a situation just, like that, if you see someone with that much room,
you've
got to give it to him.
And also, if Will Tye thought he was wide open, then Eli probably did too.
Right. And now the final point I'll bring up here, Jeff, before we get to your calls, because I'm sure this will be a topic and I want to kind of hit it before we get the calls on. I see a couple of people want to talk about it already. And I mentioned how Eli kind of got beat up in this game. But the conditions weren't terrible. There was some wind, not bad.
Yeah, but
the ball wasn't slick. You know, it was just not one of those games where I think, you know, Eli missed some open guys that he would normally hit.
There's no question. And he's going to have to play better. I mean, bottom line, I mean, guy, listen, you know, in 2015, Eli had, what, 35 touchdowns and 14 interceptions?
Yeah, something like that.
You know, this year, he will tell you that he has not played that well, and he's going to have to improve if this team's going to go far. We never know what's going to happen this weekend, but, you know, it's the interceptions that really are affecting the offensive line play, not giving them enough time. So, you know, these things have just been a continuing saga of what's happening as the season goes along. And really, the bright side of it, John, like I said, is that they are starting to run the football, and you can tell how much Justin Pugh is helping that cause. Because as soon as he comes back in the lineup, the Giants start to run the football a little bit more. And, you know, this week, I think Eric Flowers, as much as we've talked about him all last week about his play, I thought that Eric Flowers did a pretty nice job in this game last night. I think he did. He probably played one of his better games from what I've watched him. But Bobby Hart struggled last night, definitely had a lot of troubles with it. Adams had a couple plays where he did not block anybody, and Graham was able to go in there and get – I mean, they had some problems. They really did. And you know what, though? Eli, if you're going to – you can't. This guy cannot take the hits that he's going to be – that he's all. I mean, he's getting up there in age, you know, and those hits are cumulative, as Coach Coughlin always used to say. The hits on the quarterback are cumulative. They add up. They add up, and before you know it, they start affecting his game.
All right, folks, 201-939-4513. My bottom line takeaway here, I thought the defense played well enough to win.
They gave up 17 points, the defense did.
Right, and again, three of those points was aided by a turnover around midfield. And if you take away just – and I you can't do this, I understand. The first drive counts, and it looked like the defense Thursday night game came out a little bit slow. I mean, the Eagles ran it right down their throats on that first drive. In fact, the Eagles ran for 62 yards on that drive, and they went for 78 yards. But if you take that, once you take that first drive away, the Eagles gained 208 yards of offense.
And it seems to be that.
And by the way, on the ground, they only gained about 55 yards.
And every week it seems that. And I know this wasn't one big play, but it was a 66-yard drive, so we'll just throw it all together and make it one.
Right.
But you look at the Dallas game. You look at the Detroit game, they seem to give up one play like, you know, there's a breakdown somewhere. And, you know, that 66-yard drive, there were some breakdowns in their defense. But they come back and they play hard. They really do. They get two interceptions. DRC, which made a great play on that one. And, the Giants played well enough on defense to win this game last night. It's the offense that didn't do much.
My point exactly. 201-939-4513. Let's get to the phones and say what's up to Chris in Syracuse. He's been holding the longest, and he'll lead us off. How you doing, Chris?
Hi, Chris.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Doing well,
Merry
Chris.
Merry Christmas.
Hey,
you too.
All right. Thank you. You guys hit a whole bunch of my points already. Just one is, and John, I already tweeted this to you, but I had said last year that I thought Trevin Wade showed a lot of flashes.
He had a great game last night. He did.
Yeah, he came out looking like garbage earlier this year, but he really, what I saw last night is kind of what I was expecting from him, because I just thought he made a ton of plays last year, and it kind of went under the radar.
He played well last week, too.
Yeah, yeah. So, and I got to tell you, this is going to kill me to say this, is it? But I have been the biggest Eli fan to a fault, almost, I've been accused of being an apologist. And I got to tell you, I'm really starting to worry if we're starting to see the beginning of the end here, because, you know, there was a time, fourth quarter, I'm all for it, and I had zero confidence last night that he was going to be able to get it done. There was another touchdown pass to Odell that I think got him in the hand right over the pylon on the right side. It was a tight throw, but, I know he couldn't step into his throws last night. I know he couldn't drive on the ball. It seemed like he was throwing everything off his back foot and getting hit right away. So, I mean, I get all that.
Yep.
But I don't know. I'm real worried here. And now, like you guys have mentioned, the run blocking seems like that's getting better. Perkins is just doing awesome, and then now the pass protection seems like it's suffering. And, you know, and I know there's a lot of facets to it, but he is getting up there, and I'm just really concerned. And, you know, I don't think we're going to get any help this weekend. I think all four teams are going to win because Dallas doesn't have much to play for. And it's going to come down, you know, to it. And I feel like even if we make it in, we're going to really struggle if we go behind early.
No, Chris, my sense from Dallas is that given they have the bye, I don't think they're going to want to take three straight weeks off and really not do a whole lot. I think they're going to play against Detroit on Monday night, to be honest with you. I think you'll see their starters the whole game. Now, you know, mentally, are they going to be completely into it? Because
yeah, that's
clinched?
A big question.
I don't know the answer to that. No one does until we see him get out there on the field. But I do think you'll see Ezekiel Elliott get his normal 20 carries, and they'll do what they normally do for that game. Now, if that means they win or not, who knows? But I do think they'll play.
Well, I hope so. And you know, you never know. Like I said, we get in. Now, we got dinged up last night, too. That's just the last question I want to ask, then I get off. I heard Harrison, I saw go out, and he came back in for play. I'm not sure if he played the rest of the game. I'm not sure what happened to Eli Apple, if he came back in. So,
Eli,
you know,
Apple's,
I mean,
fine.
We're getting banged up on D. And
yeah, of course, Eli Apple's okay. He came back in and he played. Snacks came back in towards the end of the game. I'm sure they'll take a look at that knee. And he's had a knee issue for a lot of his career, too, that he's kind of played through and fought through. We talked about that earlier in
but
the
game. But he
year.
Came back in the game, which
yeah,
is a good
sign. And he's a tough guy. He'll play through whatever he has to play for. But Ben McAdoo will talk to the media today around 5:25 on a conference call. And I'm sure we'll get some better feel for what's going on then. And then we'll have no better next week when the guys come back on Tuesday. In terms of your earlier comments, Chris, I'll hit a couple, and I want Jeff to hit them too. In terms of the pass protection, I thought Bobby Hart had a rough game last night.
He did.
In terms of protecting off the edge, I thought both guards didn't pass protect great either, to be honest with you. That's why I said Bo Allen got in there a lot around the guard.
A lot of pressure. Fletcher Cox was in there a lot last night.
Absolutely. So I think that was a problem. In terms of Eli, this is how I look at Eli. We've seen Eli have bad years before. And I've heard people, you know, voice the same worry that you had, that maybe it's the beginning of the end.
13 now, was a bad year.
Awful year. Now, he's a little older now, and I get that. So I understand your concern and why you might think that. But I'll say a couple other things in defense of Eli. The O-line, as you mentioned, has been a problem. And I think that does mess with the quarterback a little bit. I got to be honest now. You could argue that maybe it shouldn't, but I think it does.
Well, no, that's a good assessment. Absolutely.
And then number two, he's been hit a lot this year.
A lot more than he has normally.
Is he playing through stuff? Is he banged up and playing through it? I don't know the answer to those questions. Now, if we show up next year and he plays like this through the first six or seven games next year, then I see where you're coming from. But I want to give him, Jeff, a little bit more time before I start, you know, scheduling funeral arrangements. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Now, I will tell you this. Okay, the guy has started every game he's played. Okay, mm-hmm. He's taken a lot of hits over his career. And when I mean this, I'm serious. Those hits and things are cumulative. And as a guy that played into his 40s, even though I wasn't getting hit, it's an age thing. These things start to, you know, all of a sudden it just hits you that your body starts to break down a little bit. And I'm not saying anything about Eli Manning about that. I'm just saying as an older player, these things happen. And, you know, what helps you stay in the game and play is your mental part of it. That's right. Kind of, you know, but your body tells you who's boss. They really do. Your body tells you if you're going to feel this way or you're not going to feel this way. You've got to be able to do things to combat that. And a lot of times it's hard to do it during the season because you're getting beat up like he is. And really, when you think about the offensive line, yeah, they've done a nice job protecting Eli from sacks just because he gets rid of the ball so quickly.
So
but
is that them or is that him protecting himself from sacks?
Exactly. Now, I would be interested to see what the number of hits on the quarterback Eli has had this year. You know, they count them, don't they, quarterback hits?
Yeah, I could check that.
So,
absolutely.
And you look at what he did last year compared to this year, I bet there's a huge discrepancy in the numbers. Big one. I bet.
Yeah, well, real quick before I go,
yeah,
and,
Chris.
And thanks for taking my call and giving me the time, guys. But my two things is it would break my heart to see Eli going down. Don't get me wrong. I love what he's done for this franchise. But I'm just saying, you know, maybe the age is catching up with him. And the only other thing that I'll say, and I hate to criticize him, but – yeah, there's been problems with the running game. Yeah, there's been problems with the line, and you have to factor all that in. But we're giving him franchise quarterback money, and we're not getting franchise quarterback play out of him this year. And you know, I just hope that
– he's going to have to play better.
If we get in, we see some more of that magic out of him that we've seen in the past. Thanks again, guys. Merry Christmas. Enjoy your family.
You too, Chris. Thank you. You know,
and he'll
be the first to tell you that too, that I've got to play better. I got to take better care of the football. I got to make better decisions. These are not things that Eli is just not going to, you know, confess to. He understands it. And then he's just going to have to be – this team is going to have to rely offensively on Eli Manning. I'm sorry. Even because inept as the offense has been this year. We're going into week 17, and we've been talking about it all year, John. We're waiting for this offense to break out. Well, it's week 16 just ended.
Well, here's the thing, and this is – I'm not waiting for this offense to break out anymore. That's not where my head is with this offense.
I guess I didn't say – I mean, there's a lot of people are waiting to – you know what I'm saying?
No, what you said is absolutely fair, Jeff. I think you've put out there what a lot of people have
no question.
Said. But here's how I look at this offense now. We're 15 games in, all right?
16. Yeah, 15.
And if you count the preseason, you're 19 games in, all right? Because this offense wasn't really doing a whole lot in the preseason either, let's be honest.
No.
All right? To think that there's going to be this huge shift in sea change now, I think, is probably a little unrealistic. Now, can you make improvement? Sure. But is this going to look like a completely different team after 15 games at some point? No, probably not.
The improvement has been there offensively for the running game.
Sure. And you might see some steady improvement. But to me, the way this team is structured now, you don't need them to throw 45 passes and score 30 points.
No,
this team has to score 30 points all year long, and guess what?
They got 10 wins. Yeah. Their defense will take care of that.
So here's what the offense needs to do. You need to do what you did the last 2 weeks, get a nice balance between run and pass, continue to run the ball.
Effectively.
Don't have a 63-25 split pass run. Protect the football. Be efficient. Play a field position game. Let your defense win games for you, because they've shown time and time again this year, Jeff, they're capable of doing it, and play complementary football.
Complementary football.
There's nothing wrong with that. That's how the Giants won the Super Bowl in 2007. They played complementary football. Their offense wasn't going out there throwing it 80 times a game. They weren't. But you do what you need to do to win. And I know people say, oh, game manager. I hate that word. Be a game manager. Make a few big plays when they're available. Don't make the big mistakes. And the way this defense is played, Jeff, they're going to win a lot of games if they do
that. They already have. Play to your strengths. Understand. Play to your strengths. And really, this Giants defense will help the offense as long as they just – if they can just complementary football. If they can do the things they do well and eliminate the mistakes that we just talked about, this team doesn't have to score 30 points a game. They could score 20 and be okay. They really can.
On the season, according to Pro Football Focus, Eli Manning has been hit 32 times.
32 in 15 games.
Well, 32 hits and 18 sacks. So put those together, that's 50.
All right.
So that's about 3.5.
Do they have how many times he got hit last night and compared to the last few weeks?
I can bring that up, I think. I would have to go week by week on that. But let me see what I can do here for you. Hold on.
But
last night, Eli Manning, they say, got hit 8 times. But he was not sacked. But he got it 8 times. Against the Detroit Lions, he only got hit once and got sacked twice. So that's 3 total hits. Okay. Against the Cowboys, now that was a little bit worse because in the first half they knocked him around a little bit. Against the Dallas Cowboys, they honestly only have him down for 2 quarterback sacks and 1 quarterback hit in that game. That to me doesn't sound right.
All right, so that's why these
quarterback hit and sack numbers to me a lot of the times.
I guess, and again, do they count a quarterback hit like last night? The guys were going a little bit lower, and they just, you know, they were, you know, hitting them. Like, is that just if he hits them and goes down, or is it a hit? You know what I'm saying?
That's
but really,
question.
Just what you just said before the Philadelphia game, 3-3.
Yeah, and then 4 against Pittsburgh, by the way.
Okay, but then last night, 8.
Yeah.
8.
Yeah, I hit a lot yesterday. And we talked
that's
about the Eagles' defense.
Twice
line.
As
They're
much.
Good.
Yes. Yeah. So, but. The game started off down 14 points. Your game plan changes at that point.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you gotta start to think a little bit outside the box how we're going to get these numbers, this scoring back. You got to score inside the red zone.
Now, of course, if you go and you play a team like the Falcons in their building, you probably are going to have to score a little bit more.
Of course, because that team puts it up.
Just like the Steelers do.
So. And I know that the defense is good, but they're not
right.
going to hold a high-octane – offense like those
to 13 points. No, they're
going to
put up, you know, 21 or 24 or something like that.
Okay, so let's just call it 24. Well, going back and look at how many times the Giants have scored 24 points this year. Not many.
Especially if you look at the latter half of the year. In fact, I can bring that up for you right now.
All right, just go back to the Packers. The Packers put up points. The Falcons put up points. The Seahawks would be one team that they could probably get away with.
And the Lions don't score a ton either.
Yeah, no, they don't. They're right around the Giants, same
stuff. Here are the Giants' point totals. I'm going to count backwards, okay? 19, 17, 10, 14, 27 against Cleveland, 22, 21, and 28. So they've gone over 24 points twice since the bye.
That's right. It. And the 28 came against?
Philly.
Philly, yeah.
But one of those, that's pick six in that game. Remember that, too.
So 21.
And then 17 against the Rams in London. And then they scored 27 in their big game against Baltimore. And then 16 and 10 against Green Bay and Minnesota, the two before that.
One thing that you, when a lot of teams, a lot of people are comparing the 07 team and the 11 team and the things like that going into the playoffs.
Don't get me started on that.
You know,
I ranted about that on Tuesday.
It's a different, it's a different team. Yeah. It's a different everything. You know, the 07 team I can talk about because I was on it. We lost the first road game of the season, but then we ended up winning 11 in a row on the road after that. That was a good road team. The Giants are a better home team, and that really hasn't been the case for years.
Well, they're 7-1 at home.
That's what I'm saying.
So do the math. That means in non-home games right now, they're 3-4.
Yeah.
And by the way, I'm not counting that Rams game as a road game.
No, that was a neutral site.
It's a neutral site. So yeah. Really,
so
in true road games,
2-4.
They're 2-4.
Yeah. So that's something you gotta take into consideration now that they are a wild card team and they are going to have to go on the road. Can they go and, assuming that they're in the playoffs, can they go and win three games in a row scoring 23 points?
And Dallas and Cleveland were those two road wins. And real quick, if I just look at just road games.
Well, Cleveland, I mean, come on, they haven't won a game.
If I look at just road games, Jeff, the Giants have scored over 20 points twice. Cleveland and Washington. That's it. That's it. 201-939-4513.
That's it. 201-939.
Andrew in Wisconsin. He's up next. Andrew, how are you, buddy?
Hey, pretty good, guys. How are you doing?
Doing
Happy
great.
Friday.
You guys got a white. You're gonna have a white Christmas up there in Wisconsin this year?
Yes. The snow is sticking around for good this
okay.
time.
Oh, so. All right.
We're stuck. Yeah. So, kind of a funny point that I think it's interesting. Both the Eagles lost by 5 earlier this year, and we lost by 5. Yesterday, both coming on a throw, trying to get into the end zone on the last play.
And Andrew, on top of that, both teams that lost went down early in those games because of turnovers. Another thing that's similar between those two.
Yep. Yeah. Right. Interesting. Yes. So I just kind of lighthearted take to the loss. But I have three quick points and then kind of want to take your comments off air. The first, non-football related, starting off just with all the media, and it's not only New York, but just focusing on Odell, and it's not you guys, but it seems like after every loss, it's go find Odell, see what he's doing, and talk about his emotions, and I think it's just kind of, I don't know what the word is, but disgusting. I'd take Odell on my team. I'd take 10 Odells over, most of the players that don't have that type of drive and emotion, so I just kind of want to vent on that, and just the media seems stuck on just picking on Odell when, there's players like Tom Brady. If he's pissed off at the end of the game and he's, swearing on the TV copy and you see that, there's not much broad on that. So just think it's a terrible double standard. And again, like I said, it's not with you guys, just with some media outlets.
Well, he's popular. He's popular, and the newspapers and the media, they need to report on it because they're listeners and viewers and people. They want to know about Odell Beckham. And unfortunately for Odell, that's the life he's going to live.
And unfortunately, I think, Andrew, what happened too is that he set a bad standard for himself last year with the whole thing with Josh Norman. So that kind of put the spotlight on him, and he's done just enough fairly consistently this year to continue to get that spotlight held on him. And I think, unfortunately, right or wrong, agree or disagree, you wish that wasn't the case, obviously, that I think, now you're right. Even if there's nothing to talk about, and I think this thing that people talked about last night is literally nothing. The guy's upset he didn't make a play. The team lost.
Exactly.
Who cares? That stuff certainly gets overblown. No doubt about it.
And you know what's funny about that? And I can tell you this just from experience. Back in the day before the media was like it was today, That's what the cooling off period was all about, being in the locker room and having that time where guys can gather their thoughts and think about what the media is going to ask you when you come into the locker room. In today's world, there's cameras everywhere. There's people with phones. There's everything. It's not fair to the players sometimes.
Well, unfortunately, I think he would have did that outside the locker room.
But that's what I'm saying. But years ago, there was nobody in those tunnels when we came in. There was nobody around.
Really?
You could throw a trash can in the air and hit somebody, and nobody would have known about it.
I didn't know that. That's
I mean, seriously. So nowadays, it's unfortunate, but that's just the nature of the beast, and you have to understand it. And you know, listen, this guy is – it's a work in progress for him, and it's going to be a challenge for Odell Beckham the rest of his career to try to corral his emotions in a private place because there isn't any anymore.
Yeah. I think he's getting on the right path. So love his passion. But to move on, I guess my two football points are, I know a lot of the offense struggling talk has focused on the offensive line and the running backs, and just kind of want to get your takes on this. Is what about the tight ends? I mean, our two starting tight ends are an undrafted free agent, you know, from 1 year ago, and then a sixth rounder this year. So I, you know, and it's funny, whenever Will Tye gets the ball, you know, he tries to bumble and you know, jumble through defenders, but it just looks like he's stuck in mud sometimes. He's not the quickest out there. So I think that if we had a tight end like Travis Kelce or, you know, something like that, that could run those seam routes and bring the safeties in, that would allow Victor and Odell on the outside maybe to get more opportunities. So, you know, that could, I don't know, just a thought maybe could be reason. And then my last point, being an optimist, I believe we're going to clinch this weekend and get that wild card spot, hopefully with another team's loss. What do you think about next week? Is McAdoo going to rest the players, or do you think he would just treat it like another game and push forward, which is kind of what I would hope he would do, is just go, you know, whether we're in, and if even if we have nothing to play for, just put everyone out there, play a tough game, and get that mojo back for the playoffs. And thanks for your comments, guys.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Andrew. Appreciate the
call. I will tell you this. We're never going to find that out anyways. McAdoo is so tight-lipped on everything.
We'll know next Sunday around 11:30, right?
That's about it. But philosophically, I think that if the Giants clinch this weekend, you rest the players that need the rest. That's in my opinion, that's what it is.
So you give Janoris Jenkins an extra week if he needs
there's
it.
One right. Snacks Harrison, a guy that's nursing a knee. Anybody that is banged up and it really needs some rest, you look at a guy like Rashad Jennings. He may not be hurt, but he's a running back. He's been hit for 16, 17 weeks in a row. Give some of these guys a little bit of the rest that way.
Yeah,
but
and
I'm not
see how Paul Perkins can handle 18, 20 carries.
Why not? Right. Why not? But you do not want to kind of just all of a sudden go into a preseason mentality where they're gonna play the first half and then they're gonna sit them out, because don't forget, guys, when you do that in the preseason, you have 80 guys, 60 guys, you don't have that many players.
You can't
to be
rest
able,
everybody.
You can't. You cannot do it. So
now I will say this too, knowing Ben McAdoo and his Western Pennsylvania roots, he does not seem like a guy that would want to go into a football game and not try to win it every possible way he can either.
No question.
So, again, he, like Jeff said, we don't know what he's going to do. I don't know what his strategy is going to be. But simply based on his personality, he's not a guy of half measures. Let me put it that way.
But he's a smart guy, and he'll if he has to rest some guys, he will.
Correct.
You know, but he's not going to do it to he's not going to tell any of us anyway, so we'll find out, like John said.
Do you want to go into the playoffs losing two straight?
No. See, that's the thing. And I also think sometimes that number one seed, having those 2 weeks off, when you think about it, it can hurt a team.
Which is why I don't think Dallas is resting guys on Monday night. I really don't. I don't think, as like you said, as
that's
number
three
one
weeks.
Seed, how are you going to not play a real game for three full weeks?
You know who could do that? One team.
Patriots.
They can do that. Right? I mean, there is no other team that could rest guys for 3 weeks and still win the Super Bowl.
See, here's the thing with Dallas, and I think this could maybe keep them engaged, and I think it's interesting. If they play a regular game this week, let's say they just play normal, they do what they do. If
Which
they
Giants
say,
fans hope they do.
You know what? We're going to rest some guys that last week of the year, but you know what we're going to do? We're going to play Tony Romo. I think that maybe gives that game then a little bit more juice, and it gives some of the veterans especially, you know what? Let's try to get Tony a win. This is his final game starting quarterback for the Cowboys.
And it would behoove them to do that, because Tony Romo hasn't played a game in a long time. What happens if something happens?
You want Romo ready to go.
Get a little bit. Let him get sore. Let him get some soreness out of there, because practicing, you don't get sore. In the games, you get sore because you're going to get hit. That's a good point.
Yeah, let's go to Oren in Richmond, Virginia.
Oren.
Next. Oren, how are you, buddy?
Hey, John. Sorry. I'm nervous.
That's okay, man. Relax. We're all friends here, man.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I don't really think Eli Manning is slowing down enough, man. I felt like Aaron Flowers played a lot better. I think he played one of his best games this season.
Agreed.
I felt like maybe Eli needs to realize that he has a defense now that can help him out. It's not like last season that he doesn't need to be taking big risks, because honestly, if he didn't throw that pick six, we would have won the game.
You know, Oren, the funny thing about it is that, you know, that first pass, it was a bad decision. He threw it to a guy that wasn't open, but it wasn't like he was trying to force a big play. And his second interception, quite frankly, Shepard was open. He had his man beat down the sideline. If he throws a better pass, it's not an interception. So I don't see those, at least the second one especially, as trying to force something that's not there. I just thought it was a bad throw, to be quite honest with you.
The first one was a bad throw.
Bad decision and a bad
and
throw.
A bad, right. The second one
which is,
got a little baited. Jenkins baited him a little bit.
Yeah, but if he throws that over the top,
no question,
he can complete it.
He doesn't get it, right.
Go ahead, Oren. I'm sorry.
And I also, I feel like even if we clinch the playoffs this week, I feel like that we need to play against the Redskins. I feel like.
I agree.
Because we haven't really played that well on the road. Like, I haven't feel like how we feel at home. If you're playing at home and we had that first seed bye and everything, I feel like we won the Super Bowl easily because we play very well at home for some reason. But on the road, I really want to see the offense really click. And I feel like if we need to start making Pearl Perkins, you know, give him the ball more, because I like what I saw out of him yesterday. Yep. Those are one of the positive things I saw. I felt they should have gave him the ball more and stuff, keep him in and actually just put him as a starting running back, because I feel like he's actually getting more. You give him the ball, the more he becomes better and better, and that can give us some balance. And then Pugh and Flowers together are playing good, is playing great. Like, I like how that's getting better. Like, I feel like if we keep, like, I think next week they should play everybody. They should definitely play the offense. Maybe rest some defensive players and stuff. But especially we couldn't, I think they should start the offense, though. So we can, like, we're going to have first playoff game the week after that. And you want to be motivated. You want to, like, have the offense ready and hot. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no
just
question.
Come out on Redskins, you know, just start, you know, throwing that thing.
I feel like if you're going to rest anybody, you're going to rest your defense.
Yeah,
because like guys like Olivier Vernon, who played 97% of the snaps, DRC, the
snacks.
Older kind of older snacks, some of those guys. The offense, in my opinion, I think you got to play them because they need to get better. And it's more reps and try to work some of these kinks out. So that if they're going to rest players. And that's what we're going to get into now. The Giants are going to clinch this weekend. My guess, and then now next week is who's going to rest the players and how we're going to do this and that. And that's the last thing that Ben McAdoo is going to want to be asked in his press conferences is, are you going to rest the players, coach?
Thank you, guys. Appreciate the call, my friend. Good stuff.
Right. Somebody's going to ask
weekend.
It.
By the way, Dave Dominic, our intrepid producer with some good nuggets as usual. Of the six NFC, how about this, Jeff? Of the six NFC playoff teams currently in the playoffs, how many do you believe have over 500 records on the road? One's easy.
Of the six?
Yes.
All right, so we're talking 20.
One is easy.
I'm going to say two.
Correct. One team is Dallas.
Yeah.
Clearly, you're 14-2. You have to have a 500 record on the road. The other one, believe it or not, the Atlanta Falcons. Everyone else is 3-4, and the Seahawks are 2-4-1. The Bucks, who are right now in the seventh spot, are 5-2. Four of the six AFC playoff teams are over 500 on the road. One other note, the Giants have scored fewer points than any other team currently in the playoff picture in the NFC. And I imagine, Dave, do they have fewer points than both the Packers and the Bucks as well, or no? They do? Yes.
And of all those teams, Dave, you're going to be our stat guy today. What's the turnover differential on those teams? I bet the Giants
I will look that one up for you. That one's a little bit tougher to find. I can find that one for you right here.
But now I think the Giants are – they were minus two coming into this game. They ended up being minus two coming out of the game, John?
Yeah, the Giants right now sit at minus five on the season.
Yeah.
All right, so here we go.
You know what NFC, we were in 07?
I don't. Offhand.
Minus 11.
We really?
We were minus 11 in turnovers.
But in 11, I think the team was way on the plus side, if I'm not mistaken, right?
They were on the plus side. We were minus 11.
I can confirm Jeff Fiegel's numbers right now. In 2011, the Giants were plus 7. In 2007, remember, Eli did throw 20 interceptions in 2007. The Giants, according to this, were minus 9.
Minus 9.
Close enough, though.
Good. But still.
So this year, by the way, I can go back to your original question, Mr. Fiegels. Oakland, by the way, is number one in the league at plus 15. Kansas City plus 13. No surprise, those are two of the best teams in the AFC right now. New England, they're in a typical plus 6 area. Atlanta plus 8. Mm. Top NFC team on that list, along with Minnesota, who's plus 9.
Okay.
Not going to be in the playoffs. Dallas at plus 5. But Dallas is doing it in a funky way. They only have 18 takeaways, which actually is not a huge number, but they've given the ball away only 13 times. So they've kept both those numbers down, but they are plus 5. Philly plus 4, believe it or not. Their defense does force a lot of turnovers. Tampa plus 3. Detroit plus 2. Green Bay plus 5. So the only other teams that are minuses are Seattle, minus 1. Washington, who's still kind of in the playoff mix, they're minus 2. And then you have the New York Giants at minus 5. In fact, the only teams worse than the Giants at minus 5, the Chargers are also minus 5. The Texans at minus 8. The Rams at minus 10. The Browns at minus 10. The Bears at minus 11.
But the Texans are still in the hunt for the playoffs.
In the AFC.
In the AFC,
yes,
yeah.
In the AFC, correct. And yeah. Then you have the Jaguars at minus 16 and the Jets at minus 19.
Well,
so there you go.
So the other only real team involved in the playoff race that has a negative point differential with the Giants is the Houston Texans.
Right. And the Seahawks are minus 1 and the Redskins minus
2. Oh, that's
two.
Right. The Seahawks,
but
too.
They are right. Just they're close to being even.
But they are negative.
They are negative. That is correct.
And their road record is what did you say? 2-4-1?
Yes.
Yeah. Wow.
And then Dallas already clinched home field throughout. So they're not going to be able to play at home. I think
Seattle's had to come east a couple times this year, too.
Something's not right with Seattle this year. Their offensive line's a mess. Russell Wilson looks out of whack. The same way Eli looks out of whack this year, Russell Wilson looks out of whack. Earl Thomas is now off of the year. They're not right to me. This, to me, is not a vintage Seattle Seahawks team.
They're a team that's going to go to the playoffs, but it's not going to surprise anybody if they get beat the first round.
They can't run the ball. Yeah. Their offensive line, like I mentioned, is not very strong.
And I don't think that team is a team you could say, you know what, I could see them getting hot in the playoffs. I haven't seen it all year.
It's hard to get hot when your offensive line is.
But that's what I'm saying. Yeah, I just don't – there because there's a lot of intangibles there that don't add up for them to get hot, you know.
I mean, it'll be tough for a wild card team to go there and win there in the second round.
Who do you see of all the teams in the NFC that could present a problem, like not a division winner, but some of the – you know, just kind of the lower guys. Which team scares you a little bit?
Atlanta.
Really?
I want no part of the Falcons this year. I think their defense has improved as the year has gone along. Julio Jones, they've rested him. And
yeah,
he's
coming back this week.
Taylor Gabriel has kind of come on as a big play threat. They have.
How about their running game?
Two good running backs in Devontae Freeman and Tevin Coleman.
Yeah.
Their offensive line made improvements this year. And, again, their defense aren't world beaters. But
and don't forget about Matty Ice.
They've been okay.
I mean, Matty Ice, my goodness.
He's having a hell of a year. He could be MVP. So, you know me, I always fight with people on the show. I like Matt Ryan. I think he's a really good quarterback. Other people, you know, I can't win a big game and all this stuff. People forget if Harry Douglas is a trip over his own feet, they win and go to the NFC Championship game a couple years ago. So,
sure.
I mean.
So you like Atlanta.
I don't see a lot of big holes in that team.
Yeah.
I don't see big holes. Green Bay, I still don't think they're right.
I also just don't see – I'm still not convinced. I think the Cowboys are a good football team, okay? Even though the Giants have beat them twice, I still think they're a good football team because they can run the football.
They just make so few mistakes, Jeff. That's why they're tough to beat. They're not going to beat themselves.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, but beyond them, you know what? It's pretty wide open.
I agree.
I mean, if there's a year that you could say, I don't know who's going to be in the NFC Championship, this would probably be it because, you know, probably maybe Dallas and whoever, but –
if Dallas doesn't have to play the Giants in their first home playoff game. I think they'll probably go to the NFC Championship game. But if the all bets are off. No, it's really hard to beat a team three times in a year. I get that. But all bets are off.
And just 2 years ago, you look at the Cowboys. They were 14-2 and went to the NFC. You know, they were in the playoffs.
They went to the NFC Championship game. They lost to the
Packers.
Yeah,
just 2 years ago. So, you know, they do. Jason Garrett's done a nice job. And those two rookies are, man, they're beasts. Both those guys. They are beasts.
And they seem to be, you know, solid guys, too.
No
they don't
question.
Seem to be bad
we
guys.
Haven't heard anything in the news about them being, you know.
No, though you do have the Prescott that had the DUI. At the end of his college year. So he got dropped. But then you had Elliott, of course, you have the domestic violence allegations. You don't know what the deal is
with
that.
But presently.
Correct.
Presently, they've done a nice job with it. And you know who else we don't see in the news much anymore is Dez Bryant.
Yeah, he seems to have kind of
accepted his role.
If he does stupid stuff, at least he doesn't do it, obviously, so everybody can see it.
You know what they probably finally figured out is that I like my money.
Well, you know, Dez
stop finding me, man.
That's true, too. And Dez is also one of those guys that, you know, if you read about his upbringing, he had a really
tough one.
Rough upbringing.
Yeah. A lot of these guys. A lot of these guys have. A lot of these, you know, of the 1,800 players in the league, you know, you go down from top to bottom. There is a lot of interesting stories about these guys and how they make it.
And that's why football's so powerful. It gives
guys
that come from really, and sports in general, it gives guys that come from some really rough situations.
Every week you hear something.
And it gives them the ability to, you know, become men, mature, grow up, and become, you know, really
successful.
Good, successful parts of society.
How else is somebody coming from the hood, you know, if you will, and then they don't have a great education, but they're able to get a college scholarship, they get an education in school, and then go play professional football and make a lot of money. That is the true way right to the very top to be successful and make some money.
You talk to some of these guys, and Antonio Pierce tells some of these stories. He came from Compton.
Sure.
He came from a really bad neighborhood. And he used to tell stories about these guys that he used to play ball with in high school. He goes, these guys were the best athletes I ever was around. They were better players than me, but, you know, they get involved in stuff off the field.
They
you know,
gang
God forbid
stuff
they get shot or whatever.
Absolutely.
And, you know, and they don't make it, so it's too bad. Anyway, Conrad in Manhattan, as we go off on a really weird tangent. Conrad, how are you, pal?
We're back, Conrad. Here we go.
Reel us back in, buddy. Reel us back in.
Well, since you, I'll do my best. But looking at the game last night, I love Eli. I'm a big defender of Eli. And this call, I have to kill him, and I have to also, you know, give him a pass on that Will Tye throw. Will Tye, he didn't have a chance to step up to actually put a better zip on that ball. So I won't blame him for that.
Correct.
Eli, we are very fortunate as Giants fans to have Eli as a quarterback, knowing how to take a hit. And I think that's a lot of things. If you look at Eli, Eli gets hit a lot, but he knows how to take a hit.
You know, it's kind of right. It's funny. I want to add to that because I think you make a good point.
He does.
And people complain sometimes about Eli going off on his back foot and bailing out and things like that. And, yeah, it does happen sometimes.
And that's why.
You can't argue it. But you know what, Conrad? And if he didn't do that,
he's getting snailed.
I guarantee you he wouldn't have this consecutive game streak either. So, you know, you have to take the good and the bad. It's like the Yankee fans that used to complain about Robinson Cano, how he didn't sprint out every ground ball and didn't look like he was going full speed all the time.
Because he had hamstring problems.
Well, guess what? The guy played 160 games every single year. Would you rather have him sprinting out a ground ball the second, or would you rather have him playing 162 games?
Right.
Take your pick.
Yep.
That's right. So, with that being said, he's been in the league for 13 years, gave us two Super Bowls, and he's a great guy. But I would love for Eli to be able to make the basic throws that he should be making. That ball that he threw to Shepard, where Shepard had that corner beat, that ball has no business hitting that corner's back helmet.
No,
that's
fair.
That was a ball that was underthrown.
Yep.
So that's 7 points that's missed right there on a crucial game.
No argument from us, Conrad. No argument. And he also had a pass that could have went to a first down to Victor Cruz early in the game that he short hopped.
No question. He also had a pass on third down to Odell Beckham against the Detroit Lions that he just rifled in there too. So when he has time, when he has protection, when his footwork is what it's supposed to be, Eli Manning can still throw a good ball with some heat on it. But when you're throwing off your back foot and you got pressure, the Eagles pressured Eli Manning. I don't even know what the percentage is, but it wasn't a lot. They got a lot of pressure with their three-man rush. They didn't even blitz last night, I don't think. Maybe once or twice last night.
Not much. And I can tell you just real specifically, in terms of I talked about the hits last night. In terms of the hurries, Eli Manning, so he had 60 dropbacks, right? 63 dropbacks. He was hit on 8 and hurried on 12. So that's a third of his dropbacks. He got either forced to get rid of the ball quick because of pressure, or he got hit.
Yep. And one thing that I'm worried about going into the playoffs, I think we're going to make the playoffs. I don't think it's a given, but I think we're going to
sure.
make. When you look at the turnovers, our defense, okay, first drive of Philadelphia came, they marched right down the field. After that Cromartie pick, and it's been happening the entire year, we get the ball back. What do? We go 3 and out and give the ball right back. This has been something that we've suffered the entire year. The defense go out, they'll do their job, 3 and out. I'll take a 3 and out. I consider a 3 and out as a turnover, okay? Especially in yesterday's game. The offense turn around and give the ball right back to them. I love Will Ty. I think that every time he has the ball in his hand, I'm not worried about him fumbling. So he's definitely an upgrade when it comes to Larry Donnell. But Eli has to know his players. Will Ty is not the most shifty, flexible, you know, nimble type of tight end. You got to be able to put the ball in his hand. Yesterday, he caught a ball that Eli, you know, I don't know whether the ball flew out of his hand, but the ball was extremely high, and Will Ty made that catch. But Will Ty is not a guy where you're going to put the ball in his back shoulder. He's going to turn around and catch that type of ball. He's just not that flexible. So Eli got to be able to throw the ball at places where these guys are going to actually have a chance to make a catch. That Odell Paulson, the play before the last play, he had that. He threw that ball last year against Washington when they had the two deep safeties playing deep, and you know Beckham went up the middle and did a deep post, and Eli led him led the ball to him, and he was able to run underneath that. That was the same thing he was supposed to do yesterday, and Beckham said that was on him, but that was nowhere near on Beckham. That was all Eli, and again, I love Eli.
And we've gone over that. I think you're right. I mean, John hasn't had a chance to see it again, and I think once he does, he'll realize that was definitely on Eli.
I don't think it was, honestly, I don't think it was on either guy. I thought it was just covered well. I thought the safety was sitting back there waiting for him. I don't think there was a lot of room.
I think there was a little bit of room, but I think it would have been it would have been an amazing catch and throw with a guy that would, I'd say, was 80% covered.
Okay.
Right. And I agree with that. But the only reason why I'd even bring that up is because I've seen Eli make those throws. And for some reason, I don't understand, what is wrong with using our – and the last caller said this. What is wrong with using our tight end up the seam? We have two tight ends, Adams and Todd, that could catch. I know sometimes, you know, because of the lack of offensive linemen that we – you know, that's the lack of offensive linemen plays that we don't really have. So I understand you got to hold the tight end back for blocking, but if you have two safeties playing deep, and I'm not no, you know, offensive coordinator, I could imagine that the middle is going to be open, especially when you have the linebackers in the box. You know what? What about the running backs and the tight ends going up the middle and force the safeties, to make a choice between doubling Beckham or coming down on a tight end?
I just don't think they can get open. That's my. I think that's why you don't see it.
We got to run, Conrad. Yeah. Thanks for the call, man. Appreciate it, bro.
I don't see. You know,
Merry
Christmas.
I
think Adams is so. He's just such a newbie. I don't think he understands the game. Really good right now.
Can they get separation going up the field?
That's my point. I don't think they can. And I think that's why you're not seeing it.
Mark in Chicago will wrap us up today. Mark, how are you, buddy?
Hi, Mark.
Hey guys, Merry Christmas.
You too.
Merry Christmas.
You know, I look at the game. I was really upset last night after the game, especially with the officiating. I just thought it was so one-sided. But then I thought, you know, when I looked at the schedule when it came out, Thursday night, Philadelphia, that's going to be a tough game to win. So I had that as an L already. So, you know, I'm using that to get over it. But anyway.
Self-therapy,
are you?
I just
want to talk about McAdoo, and I'll talk about Will Ty because I know we're running late. I just don't think running the ball is in Ben McAdoo's DNA. And, Jeff, you made up a good point. The second play of the game, he abandoned the running game. If you get a 2nd and 3, you got to run the ball.
Yeah, establish
and
it.
He just doesn't want to do it. And how much of that game last night was played with Philly having a 5-point lead? That's a point that you can reestablish the running game and get back into it. I mean, I think McAdoo has to look at Eli's record when he throws more than 50 passes a game, and I bet it's less than 50%.
Well, it's way less than 50%, I promise you.
Yeah. So,
yeah, fair point, Mark.
Anyway, the other thing, just on Will Tye, I know what you said about Adams and, you know, him not knowing exactly what to do sometimes, but at least the guy runs north-south. Will Tye goes out there, he sits there, his yards after catch is minimal. Mm-hmm. And I think running him up the seam, like the last caller said, I think would be a vast improvement over what we're doing with Will Tye.
And
I'll
think,
leave it at that, and we can move on. Thanks,
thank
guys.
You,
thank
and
you,
and
Mark.
I think, I think you will see that with Adams, and I think that's why they drafted him. The upside to him is he does have some, get some separation and some vertical speed out of the tight end position. You're right about Tye. His yards after catch aren't much. But, you know, the guy's doing the best he can. I think that Adams is more of your guy, like the tight end that you want out of this offense.
It's time for everyone's
I totally forgot.
Game.
I thought we were running out of time. I thought we were going to get to it, Schmelk.
Now we'll go
I don't
quick.
Have a great memory.
22 All right. NFL seasons.
Wow.
Hundreds of players.
Feagles with the Eagles.
Let's see who Jeff remembers.
Hundreds. You can make a mockery of my memory.
Here's your host.
That was just so.
John Schmelk.
Okay, see, Johnny boy.
The holiday season, some people would take it easy on Jeff Feagles and relax.
Not,
I'm
not
dropping
the Grinch.
The
Schmelk.
Hammer.
You're wearing green today? No.
I got blue. You're the one.
Because you look like a Grinch to me.
You got a little green in your cap over there. All right, here we go. You ready?
I'm ready.
We'll do these quick.
All right.
Did you play with DJ Johnson?
Yes. Yes. Arizona Cardinals. Running back. Next question.
Dig.
Bingo, baby.
Well done, Jeff.
I had you. You were lost for words. I was just cranking them out right there. Now watch me just screw this one up.
Did you play with Tony Johnson?
Tony Johnson. I don't remember Tony. I don't remember Tony.
You say no?
No.
Ding! 12-10, Jeff Feagles. All right, here comes the coup de grace. Did you play with John Hilliard?
I played with, is that Ike?
No, that is not Ike Hilliard.
But I did play with John Hilliard, yeah.
Where did you play with John Hilliard?
Oh, see, here we go now. John Hilliard, I believe, was with Seattle?
Bing! 3-3. All right,
woo!
Last one. Last one, this is the toughest. Did you play with Christopher Kringle?
Are you kidding me? Oh, yeah, okay, whatever.
No, you did not.
Listen, if I played with Christopher Kringle, I would definitely remember where, when, and why.
3-0.
Oh, man, the memory after only a few hours of sleep last night. Maybe that's the key to me. I must get too much sleep.
And you know what? Two tough names. I gave you two Johnsons, and you got them right.
Yeah, that's good. What a
that
day.
Is a hell of a job, Jeff. That is
thank
a
you.
Good
Merry
job
Christmas.
Out of you,
thank
man.
You. Merry Christmas.
Merry
to
Christmas to Feagles.
Yep.
Hope you guys have a great holiday weekend. Merry Christmas to you, those that celebrate. Otherwise, enjoy taking advantage of the time off you're going to get because of it. And
yep. We're actually
going to
get a little time off,
yes,
which is
nice.
We
will not be here on Monday. So we'll be back here next Tuesday. It'll be me and either Dottino or Feagles. We got to figure out our schedule next week.
Figure it out.
So we'll be back for that. Otherwise, stay tuned to Giants.com the rest of the weekend. We'll have some holiday stuff up from the guys, some good community stuff, our holiday card as well. We'll hit the web this weekend as the Giants get ready for their final regular season game of the season. Can you believe it's gotten here that quick?
That means we have to start talking about the draft again soon?
Shut up. For the one and only Jeff Feagles, we have the NFL playoffs to get through first. Let's enjoy that, okay?
Yeah, definitely.
For Jeff Feagles, I'm John Schmelk. Thank you so much for joining us. For David Dominic as well, our producer. We'll see you on Tuesday on Giants.com. Everybody have a very Merry Christmas and a great holiday weekend. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you on Tuesday.